Good morning and welcome to Preventing Grace podcast for the week after the election, that seminal moment in our nation's tragic history. We didn't podcast during the week because I can't remember why.
We were too tired.
We were too tired. You stayed up all night on election night.
Yeah.
And I surprisingly went to bed at 1 a.m. and still function the next day, but it was kind of a long week, and
we've
been reading a lot of news and stuff like that, so we haven't taken the time to podcast, but now we are, so that's really exciting. So tell me, I read on somebody else's site what they articulated their journey, their election night journey. And so I wondered if you wanted to share with us your election night journey.
I was sitting with you most of the time. You were there until about 11, I think. Did you get about 11?
One. Yeah. I stayed until 1.
Well, I really was. I was thinking about how prepared I was going to be for another Hillary Clinton White House, because that's where I thought we were headed, and everyone else did too. And so we were just kind of waiting for the inevitable doom. But, you know, I thought the other side would be doomed, too. So, this was actually the first... I love election night. You know, since we've been married, I stay up on election night every 4 years. And I usually have a horse in the race, so I'm usually on edge and excited and hoping and praying for my candidate to win. But this time I didn't have a horse, so I was remarkably free of angst. But at the same time, you know... I was also, you know, knowing that I was going to be disappointed whoever won. But again, everyone thought Hillary was going to win. I mean, what was enjoyable was watching the press, because they have, and you know, maybe this is betraying my own conservatism here, but the press is uniformly Hillary, with the exception of Fox, but most of them are uniformly pushing Hillary, and so that was fun. As returns came in to watch.
I really wish that we had been watching MSNBC.
Right.
I feel sad that we were stuck with Fox.
We watched Fox because, well, I was able to turn...
We were live streaming.
Yeah, so we don't have cable, so we had to live stream Fox on our Apple TV. But but I was able to turn and look at some different things later on in the evening, which I did. And, yeah, it was the faces... of the people were stunned disbelief, shock, amazement. Some of the pundits looked like they were gonna break down into tears. But I remember when it started to change, though. It started to change when they couldn't call Florida. At least that's what I remember, the time when I sat up and took notice, because they couldn't call Florida, which I thought was going to be pretty, you know,
easy.
Pretty easy. And they couldn't call North Carolina, and they couldn't call Michigan, they couldn't call PA, and it was... Those were states that you would expect Hillary to just kind of run away with.
Those were easily called by Obama, and
yeah,
they were supposed to be Romney states,
right?
4 years ago, and they took forever to call them. Like this time,
right?
When it was the other direction,
right? So I couldn't go to bed. I still couldn't believe it, though, until I had to wait for the victory speeches or the concession speeches, and then it turned out that... I think it was like 2:00, 1:30 or so, when there was just no chance for her to win, that Hillary Clinton came out and...
her
John Podesta came out and said that she wasn't going to come out. And then Trump was going to go to his victory celebration and announce victory. Yeah. But, you know, I was thinking, oh, man, this is going to be a nightmare. He can't announce victory until she concedes. But... she did on the way to the stadium. So he came out. I watched the speech. It was what I expected from him, the general tenor of Trump's comments on the on the whole. His victory speech was remarkably
sane.
Yeah, it was sane. It was sane. So I went to bed after that, but
you didn't function the next day.
Not very much.
That was part of the election night journey. I have just thought in my mind, really, since Trump came in to the race that, I'm still searching for words for it, but that it's within God's economy, logical or theological economy, that Trump should definitely win, because why wouldn't he? That's really all I've gone on for all these months, thinking that he has to win, because that would be just and right. It would be a just thing for Trump to win. One, because then Hillary would lose, and she ought to lose. And two, because it would be humiliating for America to see what they really look like. You know, maybe it's like the picture of Dorian Gray. I think that's what it is. Trump is the moment that we can really look at who we are and be forced to accept it. And some people accept it joyously.
Right.
And some people recoil in horror.
I am afraid of what he's going to, the decisions he's going to make. But at the same time, you know, I expected to be far more devastated
than
I was. I guess the joy of seeing the media upended and Hillary not in office has made me, and the fact that, or not the fact, the least hope that we may not have, you know, pro-baby murder Supreme Court justices, that, oh, and the possibility of dismantling Obamacare, and I don't know, that my heart felt strangely warmed in a Wesleyan way after I realized that he'd won. I wasn't as disappointed.
You thought you'd be really... I didn't think I would be disappointed. I mean, I was really charmed and amazed when Mrs. Clinton lost. And I also felt kind of devastated for her. I didn't expect to feel empathy for her, because, of course, I know that she does not feel empathy for me, nor does the left feel empathy for the right at all.
Right.
But watching the people crying, I felt sort of the weight of the unkindness of the whole last 2 years, that the whole process is unkind. Everything is sort of set up to be difficult and upsetting for people. I think the greatest unkindness is that you would go into election night not knowing how you were really doing in the polls. I thought that was really devastating. You should go in, Mrs. Clinton should have gone into the night kind of knowing where she stood, and to have been that surprised, I thought, was really
tragic. I'm trying to think of another time the polls have been this badly off.
Well, Brexit.
Brexit, right? But I mean, in American electoral history, maybe
just that one midterm where the Tea Party really took it away.
That's right. That's what happened. I knew there was something that I'm missing.
And the problem is that people went after that. Then there was the Romney campaign, and people thought, oh, well, it must be like those midterms. The polls must be really wrong, but they weren't. And so
you really can't trust them at all. You don't know. You don't know what's going
to happen. So I think people thought, well, you know, they learned their lesson that one midterm, so the next time they were good, and so they must have continued to know. But I'm thinking, really, that people didn't know how to poll, you know.
Yeah. In some ways, that's good. I mean, I think I was listening to the Federalist podcast, where one of the commenters was saying it's good not to, the polls have kind of ruined our process, and it would be better for us not to know who's ahead. We just go in and vote.
And vote.
And that would be more democratic than kind of the knowing where the herd is headed does influence some people to vote with the herd or against the herd without knowing. Without knowing, we'd be able to have a real, okay, this is the candidate who I support because this candidate.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to take a stand and you can't kind of follow where everybody else is going.
One of the things that I am excited about is when you read what he promised to do in the first 100 days, it's like, it's Christmas. I'm not saying he's going to do them, because remember, this is a guy who, you know, divorced 3 times. He's lied to his, because of his own adultery. Divorce doesn't necessarily mean that he's a dishonest person, but the fact that they were because of adultery does. So he's lied, broken his vows 3 times to his wife, so I can't trust that he's going to you know, put these promises into action. But the promises themselves, not all of them, but man, there's some really good stuff in there with home for homeschoolers. The support for school choice is one of the
That would be nice.
That would be nice. The dismantling of Obamacare. I mean, one of the things I thought was most revealed the deafness of the left is, you know, there are guys here I know who are working minimum wage jobs, if that, but who are being forced to pay $800 or more a month on health insurance. They can't afford that.
And
you can't say no because you'll be penalized by what people are doing is taking the penalty.
It's cheaper,
but it may not. There was talk about making it not cheaper, and that way you'd force people into spending money they can't afford on healthcare.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be the thing to help the little guy out. That's absurd. Of course people are upset about it.
Yeah, it potentially devastates towns like this one.
Yeah.
As people have watched their premiums go up year by year, it's really immoral, I think.
Right.
To do it in the name of morality, too, was really rich.
And if he really does replace Supreme Court judges with originalists who were going to interpret the Constitution as the founders intended it to be interpreted, as they wrote it, then we're going to have...
You have too much hope in your voice.
I know. I don't... This is the thing. It all rests on an untrustworthy person. That's the problem.
Yeah.
But if he does it, that will be great, because then there's a possibility that abortion could be that... even overturned. I mean,
I doubt that.
Well, if you get a majority of originalist judges on the bench, a lot of things
they
can
don't
happen.
Revisit old cases though. You have to litigate.
You get a
new
case, right? You get a new case that would overturn it. So,
well, I don't even think I would believe it when I see it.
Well, maybe you're wrong. I'm not. Again, I'm not on the Trump train. But if he can do these things, that would be wonderful.
Well,
so it's kind of an enviable position, because now we can sit back. We don't have an ownership in him. We didn't vote for him.
Yeah.
So it's not our fault. Whatever happens.
It's not our fault.
But we do get to reap the benefits of the
yeah.
of whatever good he does.
I feel like there's some flaw there, but
I'm sure there is. I'm too tired. It sounds hypocritical for some reason, but I can't.
The thing that surprised me was the sense of freedom when the next morning when I saw that he won, I did have this big sense of, this is not my baby, not my bathwater. No, that's the wrong one. Not my monkeys, not my circus.
That's not my baby, not my bed.
Well, like, it's not my...
you didn't put this person
I out. Feel relieved. I felt a huge sense of relief that I hadn't voted for him.
And after, a huge sense of relief that Clinton wasn't.
Well, I really not a sense of relief that he won. Huge sense of relief that I didn't vote for him, that I'm not implicated morally in what happens in the next 4 years, because I just trust... I trust reality to show that there's going to be some pretty bad stuff that goes down in the next cycle.
I tend to be more optimistic. I think it's going to be... I think the fact that you have a Republican House in Congress, or House
and
Senate...
That scares me to death. I think they're going to spend all the money. They're going to get together, and they're going to get a raise, and they're going to, like...
No, but sweetie, they're going to have term limits now.
Yeah, okay. I saw that. Yeah.
Would you like to voluntarily limit your power? Sure.
Sure. I don't like undivided government, or whatever they're calling it. I think government should be divided and impossible. It should be impossible for people. Yeah,
but gridlock. It needs to be gridlocked at a better place than it's gridlocked now. So if this Republican Congress can push Obamacare back, push the Supreme Court judge, or push school choice, push tax relief, put in simplification, which is another thing. You see, we're our tax bracket will go down from a 15% tax bracket
and
to a 12% tax bracket.
Morally, that's not good for us. Like, that's not good. We should not become richer as a nation right now. Like, we should not, this should not. We are already,
you know, in one peril. Of the most prosperous times in Israel's history was during Ahab.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Ahab's what I'm saying.
Reign or Omri's.
Okay. Yeah.
who did not walk after the wave.
That's what I'm saying.
The Lord, continued to worship in the high places and in
should not get richer. Right. We should not have more money in our pockets. All of us, even the Christians, should become slightly poorer. Just from a spiritual standpoint.
Maybe God wants us to pack away some money before the
deluge before the comes. Next apocalypse, because right. This was supposed to be the apocalypse. Right. I just think this is scary. As a Christian, this makes me alarmed that we would have undivided Republican government, which can therefore enact great evil. And I'm so delighted that I did not vote for it. No, but
they can push back. They can push back the evil that's existing. Just for a little bit. And
then create some new.
And then stop. And then we get a Democrat. Then if they undo Obamacare and undo.
And then in 2 years we get.
Choice or school, the horrible system that we have now and enact school choice and they lower taxes. The screaming will be, or if they do anything on immigration, the screaming will be so vast across this country that in 2 years you'll have another, you have more balance in the Congress, and then we have gridlock again, which is great.
Okay.
So, but it has to be pushed back before the gridlock comes.
I just think people are evil. Like,
that was a big thing for a while. That we can't have gridlock.
Yeah.
There's too much arguing. No, we don't need to get anything done.
Please don't do anything.
Stop.
Please, when you go there, please don't do anything. Just fight. Sit in your chair and literally eat candy and do nothing, please.
I don't want you to get to work for the American people.
Yes. We've seen you work
for the American people before. And
it really rots.
Really, it's okay. We're fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for all that. Yeah. Please, let's not get... I saw the huge infrastructure stimulus. See? That's the first thing they do is rush in to spend more money that's not there.
But what's that pointed at, the infrastructure stimulus? Isn't it pointed at the roads and the...
Yeah, roads and bridges.
Which are horrible.
No.
And that's something the government should do.
No. Oh, my word. Who are you? No, the government should get... They do a bad job, so they should devolve that back to the local communities, just like education. Right.
Isn't that the point? You give money to the local communities to do that?
I'm sure that the money will come here. I'm sure. It's going to be great. So, I'm going to pour myself. Would you like to say something about the sound quality of this?
Yeah, we had several complaints about the sound quality in our studio. Our studio is a bed.
I know, so that's horrifying.
I know. We wake up, we turn on the iPad or iPod. It's not an iPad. It's my iPhone recording app.
So you can hear me pouring my tea here.
And
pouring it on the
and
floor.
And we podcast. So this is on our day. This is my day off. It's Monday. So I didn't wake up at my usual time. We wake up late. We podcast. And someone was complaining about the scratchiness. So I'll say, I mean, if our listener would like to fund a new studio for us.
We should get a PayPal right. button.
Right, yeah, we'll do that. So if you want to fund a quality sound studio. We could do
a GoFundMe for our right. podcast.
Right, for our podcast audience of one. If our listener would like to fund a more pleasant listening experience, that's what needs to happen. Because otherwise we don't know how to, we are technologically...
Technology is hard.
Well, like okay, we know the internet, we know computers, basically. but when it comes to how you put one of these things up on the internet and make it sound well, sound good, or record it in a way that it sounds
not only do we like not know quality of thing, we don't even know how to talk about it.
We have no idea what we're talking about.
As you are seeing exactly. right now. So there's a thing so there here, and then we wanted to make the other thing go up on...
Right.
So sorry. This is really just our apology for the...
That was a good segue into the safety pin thing, which I really wanted to talk about.
Okay. I just want to warn you. I'm just going to give you a little warning. You have just been on the internet because you're mad about the safety pins. And you have made some people who are dear to me very angry. And so I think that you should be calm.
Did you have to say that? We were...
And...
we're having a conversation.
Okay, let's just talk nicely. In the most mild way possible, Matt, what bothers you about the safety pins?
It's the same thing that bothers me about... Okay, well, two things come together to create the perfect storm of pomposity. The first is the safety pin itself is... It's chosen because it's like a safe space, you know, you're on campus where...
Except it's very
sharp.
Little
dear unicorn children who, oh, someone might have an opinion that's opposite of mine, and that would hurt my feelings. Because these are children who have grown up never having to have lost a, you know, a baseball game or a soccer game because they didn't take score when they were young, and their parents shielded them from any kind of disappointment or loss, and they go to college, and then they find themselves... up against people who are mean.
See, you're being
and
really...
And disagree, and they need a safe space.
You've got to stop. That's what...
And so they draw these, you know, they find these rooms, they draw circles in the grass, and they all sit there like a bunch of, you know, pouting little babies. And so now you can take, by putting a safety pin on your chest, you can become a safe space. So that all these little whiny unicornish people who can't deal with loss, can't deal with political difference, can go to you and be assured that you'll hear them. And worse, part of it is so that if, and this is why I'm upset with Christians wearing them, if a and quote-unquote LGBTQ, whatever person, feels wounded by the Trump victory, he or she can come to you, and you, by wearing that safety pin, promise that you will...
I thought it was more
listen.
About Islamophobia.
No, it's everything.
It's
everything.
All of it mushed together.
Listen and understand. And so, no, the Christian certainly listens, but the Christian also says, okay, look, I love you. You are engaging in behavior that the scriptures say will wind up keeping you out of the kingdom of God. So let me tell you about Jesus and the gospel. And that's not safe.
Well, so...
The word of the God is not safe. So the Christian should never wear a pin like that. And secondly...
So that you can...
Wait.
Share the gospel with people.
Wait.
Okay.
That's the first aspect of it. Okay, the first act. I'm sorry, I was snapping at her.
That was really.
I know.
I don't. I feel triggered.
You're my church. I'm your Jesus.
Oh my gosh.
You need to obey me.
That's so offensive. The way you just took that off there. I don't think that should be allowed online. Somebody's gonna come after you. Okay.
So the second part of it is it's a massive virtue signal, and I know all these things are, you know, when during the 80s when people would put the little ribbons on the lapels, that was, you know, it wasn't just showing solidarity with people with AIDS or whatever, it was also showing that you had solidarity with people with AIDS, that you are so compassionate and caring, and look at me, I have the ribbon for this and a ribbon for that and a ribbon for this, and it was a way of making yourself feel like you're doing something and making yourself feel like you're righteous.
It's like a visual hashtag.
Right. Well, what's the use of virtue, as you said this morning, if you can't signal it? You gotta be able to. This is exactly what Jesus was talking about with the long phylacteries and the walking around in the marketplaces and blowing their trumpets when they give. I mean, this is what hypocrites do. They wear outward visible signs to show people just how virtuous and wonderful they are.
But,
and so you bring those two things together, the walking safe place and the long phylactery, and what do you get? You get a safety pin. That's what it is. So everyone knows, boy, you are so, so, so sensitive. You really care.
That you're just being mean.
I'm not being mean.
No,
someone said on my Facebook page, and I agree with it. That's, you know, you can go the other way. You can virtue signal in lots of ways. You can, you know, put a huge, you know, depending on what part of the country you're in, stick a humongous American flag in the back of your truck and drive drive around. That's a virtue signal, and I think it's just as weird. A little less
smug.
Smug, right? Right? Because this is smug. This is the third element. I said this, the two, the safety bit, the safe place bit, and the hypocritical virtue signaling bit. But there's also the smugness toward the rest of the country, the people who voted for Trump. Who, and if you read, even liberals, are recognizing, okay, part of our problem is that we've spent the last, you know, 4 or 5 years calling these people racists and not trying to understand why such a large group of people would vote for Trump. And it can't all be reduced to ignorance, racism, and xenophobia. There's something else going
on. Because a lot of people voted for Obama. A lot of people who voted for Trump also voted for Obama. So, and I think that a lot of people did that because they were tired of being called racist.
Right.
And now they're, it doesn't matter what you do, so the word itself becomes meaningless. The thing that I struggled with, your rage about the safety pin almost makes me want to put on a safety pin just out of spite, because I think it would be really funny.
I forbid you to do that.
Too. And also, I think it would be really funny, but also mean, to put on a safety pin and then have somebody come up and talk to you and then be the saving news of Jesus. You could be like a
false flag. You could have.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
Well, but mean and not safe. So.
Can I talk to you about my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ?
Do you know Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior?
Awesome. We should do that.
So, the thing that I found interesting in the aftermath of this election was the great sorrow that a woman hadn't won. And I was surprised to find for myself that I didn't care at all.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't excited for a woman to be president. And I know that that's because I am a bigot. And there's no way to avoid it, but I'm kidding.
No, you're really, right.
I really wanted a woman because we've got to have a woman in the White House. I find for myself is really pandering.
Mm-hmm.
I find that toxically paternalistic. You know, what is it? Every time somebody says it, it sounds like you're being reminded again that women are too helpless to do anything, so finally they get into the White House. That's the tone. I know people are trying to avoid that, but every time they say it, it's so irritating. I don't think it should matter, you know, what gender or sex you are when you run in politics. You know, the divisive race and gender politics has been so toxic the last 8 years, and I don't, you know, I really think it should go away. Of course a woman will eventually be president when a good woman runs, and it won't matter that she's a woman because she'll be, you know, she'll be the person that people want to have in that position. It's like people came into my house while I was cleaning and said, wow, I can't believe a woman could keep a house this clean. And oh my word, she wrote a book. She's amazing. And you know, she got herself together and got to church. Wow.
She drove down the road without crashing.
You know, like all these things are normal and fine. And I'm a human person. I'm able to do them. And it's not remarkable that I'm doing them as a woman.
I don't understand it either, because, you know, speaking as a man,
and
white, privileged...
Yeah, you're privileged...
Male from the South. You
better not explain you.
Who's over, you know, over 40. I would have been happy to vote for a woman if... I'm trying to think of who was the what was her name, who's running in the Republican...
Carly Fiorina.
Yeah, if she'd won, I would have voted for her in a second. It would not have even fazed me that she's a woman. I think she would have been able to handle the debates much better than Trump did. I think she would have just skewered.
That would have been really Secretary enjoyable. Clinton would have been,
yeah, it would have been fun to watch. I think she was, I think...
She was smart.
Yeah.
Unlike so many women. A remarkable thing that she was smart. Oh, wow.
No, I think there's this assumption that conservative or those who voted for Trump, anyway, not conservative necessarily, would never vote for a minority or a woman. And there's this assumption that the reason people didn't vote for Obama is because he was black.
Except that people did vote for Obama.
That's absurd. Because
he won. He was hugely popular.
I know. A large segment of the white vote that voted for Trump this time around voted for
Obama. They didn't turn out for Romney.
But I think what happens, though, is...
It doesn't count,
No, liberals don't understand, or people on the left don't understand the extent to which guys like Judge Justice Thomas, Thomas Sowell, who's it, Alan B. West, people like that, who, were they to actually run, would garner huge... amount of support, whether regardless of the color or their sex. It wouldn't matter. What really does matter for us, for me anyway, I'll talk, let me say for me, I think for most conservatives is policy and ideology. You get a true conservative up who's going to do conservative things, and you will have every conservative lining up to vote for the person.
The problem is those conservative things are inherently racist. The things that you want to do as a conservative are racist.
Like?
Lowering taxes. You racist. And stopping the mass slaughter of the black community through abortion. You want to stop that? You racist. You should try. Yeah. That should not concern you. If the black community wants to participate in abortion, then how dare you have anything to say about it. I really think the racism of abortion is so sick and deep and entrenched.
Right.
I don't agree to the charge of racism. I don't accept it at all.
Well, here's we're now going way abroad. I mean, I do think obviously there is a race problem in America, and
a deep one.
I think that there are some genuine racists, of course. I mean, I think the alt-right movement was reprehensible, and that's the one terrible thing. Well, I'm sorry, it's one of among the terrible things about Trump winning. Is that the alt-right people who have articulated racism clearly, and they need to be tamped down and
well, they need to lose in the ballot box. Right. They need to lose. Right. They don't need to be personally destroyed in the way that we now personally destroy everybody. Do you disagree with alt-right views? Use language to talk about how they're wrong. You know, if you think abortion is wrong, as I'm saying right now with words. Use words to say why you think it's wrong, why you think it's racist, why it shouldn't happen, and then in the ballot box, win. But don't cry foul and
put on a safety pin.
In safe space, and it doesn't, that hasn't panned out well, and that shutting down of everybody who disagrees about ideas, shutting them down personally has given rise to the alt-right and other ugliness because it doesn't work either.
I think that's one. I forget who was talking about the reason. One of the reasons the polls were so skewed is that when people ask people who they're going to vote for,
people wouldn't.
They wouldn't say. They were too ashamed to say I'm going to vote for Trump,
afraid.
Afraid, but they're not afraid, and they get in the polling booth and no one sees. They'll mark the name.
Yeah.
and they'll enjoy doing it, and so. And that's what happened. People who told pollsters they were not going to vote for Trump or who they were going to vote for Hillary or whatever, they get in there and they just mark, they vote.
Which is what happened with Brexit. People didn't want to say that they were, they wanted to leave.
Right.
It's very interesting.
One last thing about this is that, and I mentioned this yesterday in church, was the both the left and the right are subject to thinking that we're going to solve all this stuff by voting the right person in.
Yeah.
And getting, and if we can just have conservative policies, the our country will be okay. Vote. And if we can just get liberal policies, or if we can get just liberal policies, then we'll be okay. And so, and because our country is so divided, and there's like this clash of worldviews, passions are so high, whatever, but really, you know, from a Christian perspective, no one's, the problem is sin.
Yeah.
And there is no political answer to the question of sin. And so, regardless, if you get the best candidate in, you get the best Congress in,
systems.
You're still going to have a system that is fundamentally flawed because of human sin. And well, so the best thing you can do is preach the gospel and
systems so yeah. perfect, nobody ever had to be good, is what we're, you know, what they're, what we think we want. But they're, you still have to be good. You yeah. still can't, there's no, that doesn't exist. There cannot be utopia.
Right.
And believe me, a completely Republican government is not going to be utopic. It's not going to be.
Right, because it's going to be populated unicorn. By human beings who are there.
Who have a lot of money at their disposal and a lot of hatred of other people right. residing in there.
Well, but left and right, so.
Well, yeah, it's not going to be awesome. So, I don't know if we have time to talk about this, but another really sad thing that happened over the weekend, and I'm probably going to blog about it, is that a person who has been an enormous help, from what I read, to women, and was on Oprah and was basically a celebrity of people just loved her, and I actually don't know her. I haven't read her, so I'm going to look up her name. What is her name? Do you remember? It starts with a G. Glennon.
I don't remember the name. You told me this morning. Glennon Moore?
Glennon Doyle Melton. Hmm. Just had a book come out, and was, the book was out about how she reconciled, with her husband, or attempted to, and then a very short time after the book came out, she came on social media to announce that she had broken up with her husband. And then only a few short months later, she, in fact, yesterday announced that she's taken up with a woman. And that this is wonderful news and that her children are delighted and happy. And I just wanted to register some grief. Mainly that she has been apparently at these conferences called the Belong Conference that a lot of Christian women have gone to, and was featured there along with Jen Hatmaker. And I feel sad that I didn't even know that these conferences existed, that so many women are flocking to them, that Jen Hatmaker and this Glennon person have such a following, and that I'm just registering sadness on my own podcast. And I am probably going to write about it. I think that the church is in dire straits in the U.S. Do you want to say anything about the fact that so many self-professed evangelicals voted for Trump? To me, it's a similar kind of, dark time for Christians, that we would be so confused.
I think there's two types. There's the type that did it because they were holding their nose and they wanted to do it to protect life or to protect marriage. And so they voted Trump because they thought, okay, well, this is the only possible way we can forestall this going forward. That's one type who's in no way wanted Trump to be president or their candidate, but the other option was so horrible they couldn't deal, so they went ahead and voted for him. That's one side, and I think that's more understandable. But the others are those who were actually active and enthusiastic supporters of the guy, and that's where the hypocrisy, I think, is far more profound, because the same people, when Bill Clinton,
yeah,
was found to have done the many things that he did, and I guess does, I don't know. They were, you know, shouting from the rooftops, how can a person of this integrity could never and should never be the president of the United States. He needs to resign, he's being impeached. And here we have a man who arguably is either the same or less
or worse
virtuous than Bill Clinton was. And, you know, Bill Clinton actually apologized. And if you look at the video of his apology, it's far better than, than anything Trump's ever said on the issue.
Yeah.
Of his own mistakes. So that's... That hypocrisy, I think, is interesting. We can support a man who has no virtue as long as he supports some of our policies, or I guess supports our political point of view. And that I think is hypocrisy. I mean, that there's no more can these particular evangelicals talk about family values as a qualification for public office. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge loss, I think, because that's part of what we need to be doing as Christians in this country, if we're going to do anything, is kind of hold people to account to the law so we can preach the gospel. And we can't do that anymore.
Well, we can.
Right, we can. We are free of that kind of thing. So this woman you're talking about, though, it sounds like a Jen Hatmaker kind of thing.
Rob Bell. Apparently by the end of her book, the book started out really great, and by the end it sounded like Rob Bell. Like she was sort of self-identifying as Christian, but the kind of Christian that, you know, is eminently suitable for the age and accepted by all. And so it's not real Christianity, but she was on the stage with self-professed real Christians who have in the last couple of weeks been discovered not to be real Christians. But I think the real grief is that she was really a help to women. She's an excellent writer. People really bought up her book and read her blog, and she just ended up doing the easy and most culturally acceptable thing that you can do, and calling it courageous, which is an interesting twist, you know, because
that's what people are saying about Jen Hatmaker, how courageous she is to stand up and. No, she's siding with the vast majority of the American people. She's siding with the media. She's siding with the power elite. What a courageous stand that is to suddenly gut your faith and and go with the Zeke guys.
You are so mean. But, you know, it's our special charism here at Preventing Grace to poke everybody in the eye and make everybody angry. So, is there anything else that we wanted to talk about?
No.
Hopefully this week we'll get back into a sane way of life and turn our attention to Advent and Christmas coming up. And I did have, when you stood in church yesterday and prayed for wisdom for Donald Trump, I almost, choked on my own phlegm. I mean, he needs wisdom, but the optics of that prayer were amazing to me. So I'm going to enjoy the next 4 years.
Well, let's pray that he becomes a Christian and becomes wise.
Yeah.
Sometimes he will do rise to the office of when they're called to it. So let's pray that that happens.
That
he becomes a good president. He becomes a good man. President. That would be, you know, redemption is possible for Donald Trump.
That's true. That is true.
And Hillary Clinton. So we should pray for them both.
So I guess we'll do that. We'll go on with our day and go about in fervent prayer for all the people who need to come to Jesus. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.